a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, My High Drive Energy Water, Brian Cook, Ed Fang, Craig Gross on the phone, the MGO Blog Roundtable. The crew is complete. Guys, how you doing this morning?
I like how the water is more important than us.
Hey, man. I need the caffeine, man. I'm working on... What, 3 hours sleep tonight, a couple of nights ago, and then about 4 hours sleep last night. The work never stops. Tonight, I think I'm actually going to be able to sleep because we have some recruits coming on tomorrow. We're going to have Inside Schmeckler Hall, going to be sitting down with members of the Michigan Recruiting Brain Trust to get their thoughts on early signing day and kind of get some insight on recruiting there a bit from the guys that are part of the part of the crew of the machine, the Michigan recruiting machine. So looking forward to that. So we play that tomorrow. Going to be an easier last day before the holiday. So looking forward to that. But guys, look, let's jump right in. Let's dive right in. First of all, Craig Ross, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys?
All right. So let's just get your overall thoughts on the recruiting class. Ranked number 12 in the country by 24/7 Sports. I'll call it concern on some level. For some fans, panic on some
people are freaking out.
Yes, some are freaking out. Is this class is it freak out worthy?
Not freak out worthy, but I do agree with some level of concern. They don't really have a top 100 guy who's like solidly in the boat. I mean, Otis Reese is a soft commit who didn't sign. And, you know, there are some flyers that they took. I mean, I don't mind that they took the Luke Schoonmaker because he's a tight end. And Jim Harbaugh's record with tight end is like he gets to recruit whoever he wants and no one can complain. And I do generally like the defensive backs class. But, you know, you don't really have a Rashawn Gary in this class. You don't really have a Donovan Peoples-Jones. You don't have a five-star bell cow. And I think this is a blip. They're obviously off to a great start in 2019 with three top 100 players and two defensive ends who are fringe five-star guys. So I think this is a blip. And if it is a blip, then it's just if these guys don't pan out, then Michigan will have, you know, guys that are ready to come through in the class before and the class after.
So, Ed, you're a numbers guy. Have you ever applied your analytics to how recruiting rankings equate to success on the football field?
Yeah, I mean, they do. Put it this way, I don't use it in my preseason model, and that's an active choice of mine. But, I was talking to a guy, Dave Bartu, that actually does this, and he says, you know, you can pick about 67% of game winners straight up with recruiting rankings, which is not terrible. I don't like to make too much of it. I think Harbaugh probably did better at Stanford than the rankings of with some of his recruiting classes there. So I think a lot of what we see on the field the next couple of years is about development. And, I think there has been some disappointing development on certain parts of this team, but that doesn't – there's no guarantees heading into the future of how that's going to play out.
Craig Ross?
Yeah. I feel a little differently. I know that the mantra is five stars, do better than four stars, do better than three stars.
Well, that's true.
And it's true, but it's true only if you're throwing darts at a dartboard. And in recruiting, you're not necessarily throwing darts at a dartboard. And, I mean, for example, look at who Harbaugh brought in this first class. A couple guys, nobody, three stars. Higdon was like number 500. Grant Perry was number 900. Those have been two pretty productive players. Gentry wasn't even on the board as a tight end. And those are three guys.
Four-star quarterback.
He was a quarterback. He was 174 as a quarterback. But no one, you know, he turns out to be a tight end. And in 2016, he brought in 11 guys who were three stars. Sean McCune was a two-star, or not even on the board. He's going to probably play in the NFL, by my guess. Khalik Hudson was about number 400. He's going to play in the NFL. Medalist was 740. He's been starting. Spinellis looked like he might be real. Josh Uche was over 700. Devin Gill was 1,000. You got McDoom and Eubanks, who I think still might contribute to the program. So he's brought in 2016, he brought in a lot of kids who were under the radar type kids, and they've done pretty well. And I looked at the tapes of some of these kids, at least I haven't looked at all, but I looked at about five or six of them. And, you know, you look at Hassan Haskins, for example, who's around number 1,000. He can play. Hassan Haskins is a player. He's got great feet. He's got great balance. He could play inside linebacker if he craps out at running back, which I don't think he will. He's a good blocker. You know, he is, I think, I look at him, I say that's a four-star plus line, a running back. I look at his tape, I just like him a lot better than, say, Derek Green, I looked at his tape, I saw nothing. I saw Haskins, I see a guy who can play. And it's a Savan Summer, and I understand the level of competition, but you look at his tape and you say, wow. This guy just stands out. And that's the same for Doyle if they get him. And Ronnie Bell, who caught, I don't know, 500 balls or whatever it was this year. I mean, the kid's a yak killer. I mean, he gets the ball, no one's tackling him, and he's playing against reasonable competition. And so, to me, it isn't so much 5 versus 4 versus 3. It's look at the kid. Can this kid play, and does he fit into the system? And by and large, at least the tape I've looked at, I think, yeah, these kids can play. And I think people would really be surprised by Haskins.
So. You know, my take on the rankings, and I say it so much that it maybe it's cliche now, but guy, not the gospel. And the way I apply how much value you put in the rankings is really based. I mean, overall, I do think, you know, the teams that finish high in the rankings are going to be your better teams in college football. But when I see a team that falls outside of that, Wisconsin, for instance, if you have an example of a team, a coach that consistently outperforms his recruiting ranking or consistently hits on some of those under-the-radar guys, you look at their track record and say, all right, you're giving them the benefit of the doubt when they take a flyer on a Luke Schoonmaker. For instance,
you know, I think that there are certain positions that holds up for.
But if they show that, hey, you know, they take these shots on guys and they turn out not to be guys, then it's worthy of criticism. Now, you look at the track record of a Harbaugh, of a Brown, of a Madison. You know, they've shown in the past that they've been able to identify guys under the radar, guys that really turned into something. So when they went after Quiddy Pay last year, saying, you know, Don Brown, hey, he's been able to find an Obi Mellon Fonwu in the past, and that guy turned into something. So I tend to cut him slack. Now, if it shows over time that they a lot of these guys that they just picked up on don't hit, then I think some of the hand wringing would be warranted. But until we see a negative track, I mean, is there an example of a negative track record with these guys from what you can see?
Well, I mean, Harbaugh did a good job at Stanford at identifying under-the-radar guys who could play. And he's good at identifying coaches who can coach. So I think he does get a certain amount of slack. At certain positions, though, like, you either have the athleticism or you don't. So defensive back, you know, wide receiver, the positions where you're really kind of out on an island, you either have it or you don't. And, you know, I think the defensive back class is it's interesting because they're all the same guy.
Long.
They're all 6'2" with long arms. I posted a picture of the Krieger clones on the blog yesterday because they offered an in-state kid named Gray, who's the same guy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? Like they aren't losing any defensive backs this year.
You know what I see, and this is I want to qualify this as speculation. You know, I think I think that one or more of these guys, while they're corners by trade, one or more of these guys is going to get some run at safety.
Well, Fawcett's a safety.
And I think that having some more coverage at that position is a priority.
Well, they clearly want some guy who can be like, all right, that slot fade, I can cover it. Because that was pretty much the weakness of the defense, is they constructed their defense so that they're going to put a safety against the slot receiver, and they have a center fielder, so you can't run a post on them. But that slot fade that Penn State was able to execute pretty well came up over and over again. So,
yeah, you know, Brian, what Don Brown said yesterday was that he does not want a safety who can't cover. I mean, he's recruiting guys, whether it's corner or safety, who can play man coverage, and whether they're playing corner or safety, he wants guys who can do that. So that, yeah, I mean, what you're saying is absolutely right, and it's what Don Brown said very explicitly yesterday.
734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio at WTK.com. And I'm not saying for sure Miles or Jamon. I'm not saying any of these guys. Don't call up. Don't say that I said they're definitely going to be safeties. But I could see a scenario where, at least initially, if those guys, especially a guy like Miles, who right now is 177, but he's an early enrollee, he's going to be on campus, you know, getting indoctrinated. You know, if he sees the field as a true freshman, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if where he saw the field at least this year was in, you know, covering a slot. You know,
that's probably not going to happen, is it?
No, I don't think the odds are high, because you got some guys on campus right now
that are ready
to move into those roles.
You're bringing back all the starters. You're bringing back Ambry Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing back a third cornerback, whoever the non-starter is at cornerback, whether it's Watson. You're bringing back Jamarik Woods. You're bringing back Jalen Kelly Powell.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of this secondary class is headed for a red shirt.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I think you're probably right. But if we're looking at guys who have the best shot, certainly him as an early enrollee, and at a spot where, you know, I could see him cracking would be helping provide some coverage at that position, if he sees it at all. And again, I agree with you. I think that the majority of this class will be redshirted. I think that is based on the relative youth that was on the field last year. That's the benefit. Benefit is those guys get trial by fire, but they come back next year more experienced, and you can redshirt the guys that come in this class and give them a little bit more time in the incubator. 734-998-1050. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Email us at studio at WTK.com. We need to get to a break. We'll get to some of your phone calls, emails, and tweets. You have questions for the Roundtable crew, you can get them in now. 734-998-1050. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. You look around college football, look around the landscape, guys. You know, obviously Ohio State, another good year. Just focusing on the conference for a moment. Obviously a really good year for Ohio State again. Penn State, top five class. So James Franklin continues to recruit well in Penn State. The East, you know, the East just seems to be getting even more beastly with each recruiting class, the competition, Michigan's immediate competition.
Well, I mean, that's going to be the case now that Penn State is no longer under the shadow of the terrible thing that happened there. So that's no surprise. And Michigan has competed at the top five level the past 2 years, and they'll probably be back there next year. So I'm not too concerned about that. Small class, kind of off year. It happens.
Maryland making its presence felt again in the rankings. DJ Durkin, I know Ira has to be, you have to be quite
I told
encouraged.
The people down there that he was going to kill it on the recruiting trail. I seem to be right so far.
They're still doomed.
I said he was going to be a good recruiter for him.
Can he get a quarterback?
He needs eight in every class.
Right, yeah, how many quarterbacks did they get? They're doomed.
Okay, I didn't know where you were going with that, but I got
you. Or something yesterday?
I'm not sure. You have to ask Ira about that. I didn't go that deep into
I was only so they had a couple good pickups yesterday, but I was only slightly closely paying attention. I was watching Michigan stuff. I, you know, like a good Michigan fan / Michigan reporter, covered Michigan yesterday and didn't worry about what everybody else was doing.
Well, that's not how Michigan fans roll, man.
Oh, they picked up Byron Cowart, who was the number one overall prospect like a couple years ago, went to Auburn.
Right, he was a former Auburn guy. Yeah, he came over. Yeah, it was one of the good pickups they had yesterday.
Yeah, so they're now the fourth rated class in the Big Ten with the number 18 class overall. So the Terps are really getting it.
Yeah, it won't matter.
I hear you, man. I look at that and I say, man. I mean, the freaking East, man. I mean, you know, who knows if it's going if the West. How things will shake out when you add some more teams to the fold. But, I mean, you got Maryland recruiting up there. Now Michigan State's their top 25 recruiting class. It's like, you know, only East teams recruit well in the Big Ten for the most part.
Yeah, I feel like the recruiting rankings need to, like, just take into account the fact that Wisconsin has been so good for so long.
And Iowa. Yeah, Iowa.
Well, I mean, Iowa not so much, but Wisconsin, if an alignment commits to Wisconsin, you got to think about how you've rated them. And you got to be like, is this guy really a three-star? Because they put out so many guys from the offensive line specifically that I feel like the upper Midwest, and specifically the guys Wisconsin goes after, need a little bit more respect.
Yeah, if where those teams are, Minnesota, who's had a pretty good haul, they're number 30 in the rankings, followed by Iowa at 34 and Wisconsin at 37.
How many guys has Wisconsin have in this class?
19,
that's actually fairly large.
Right. 19 for Wisconsin, 18 for Iowa, and 26 for Minnesota. So Minnesota is obviously impacted significantly by the number of guys.
And they have like two three-star offensive linemen in this class. I haven't looked at their class. I'm just telling you this. They have two three-star offensive linemen in this class who are going to be all Big Ten. And it happens
in Minnesota?
No. Wisconsin. Gotcha. It happens every year.
Their tradition is very good. I think their line's been good this year. I think they actually struggled a little bit the previous 2 years, which was a little bit of a blip for
them.
I guess they did put a guy in the NFL 2 years ago.
They had an absolute ton of injuries a couple years ago, so they were just scrambling.
So general question, guys, before we talk some college basketball. So early signing period, good or bad for college football? Nick Saban said this is bad for college football.
Well, then it's good.
I don't think it really matters much either way, but I'm not a fan of it just because I liked the panic and chaos and insane people doing things on, like, the real signing day. Like, sure, I mean, Michigan flipped a German kid from Georgia Tech and all that stuff before, and they've kind of accelerated their sleeper acquisition program because of this new date. And I'm just like, no, just put it all in one day, make it as insane as possible, and crash the servers everywhere. That's my preference. I don't think it matters much either way. I liked the pomp and circumstance of, like, the February signing day.
Well, I'm with Ed on this. I think it probably makes sense because Saban doesn't like it. And the other part of it is, you know, doesn't it make schools, I hope this is true, be a little more honest in that, or at least limit the impact of dishonesty by schools? Because if signing day comes around in November or in December and you haven't, and you're telling the kid he's got an offer and then it's not there in November, at least he has a place to scramble over the next couple of months and try and find another place. Isn't it better for
yes.
kids? I mean, you have more cards on the table.
I mean, the flip side of that is, like, now guys are locked in and, like, more guys going to pull the, Stan Drayton?
Yeah. And just get signed and then just leave for the other job?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could definitely see that. 734-998-1050. What's up, Craig?
Well, I think this was something that both Bo and Lloyd always stressed. He said, look, you commit to the school, not a coach, and it's something that I think they always tried to sell. That you're committing to Michigan, you're not committing to Bo Schembechler or Lloyd Carr. Now, I'm not saying it's not relevant to a kid, but it's something that they always sold. And I think they advised the kids who you might even be going elsewhere. I know Lloyd did. He said, look, you're going to go to Notre Dame, don't commit to Lou Holtz. You know, he's incoherent anyway, but I commit to Notre Dame because it's a good school, and I think that it was something they were pretty explicit on. You know, I have one question for you guys. Kevin Doyle, is he going to commit to Michigan? Here's another guy who's not rated particularly high, but I look at his tape, and I like it. I mean, I like what I see out of Kevin Doyle.
He has an understanding. He's just signing with his team in February. Okay.
He hasn't undertaken any recruiting activity after his commit.
Okay.
And, like, he committed with full knowledge that Milton was in this class, so I don't think anything's really changed.
Yeah. And Shea Patterson doesn't affect those guys.
Yeah.
I think there was some concern given to how what the perception would be by the the families and the coaches of the quarterbacks here currently in the class. Mm-hmm. But Jim talked to all the quarterbacks. He talked to all the parents. He talked to the coaches. So he did his due diligence in making sure that everyone knew exactly what the thinking is with Shea Patterson. He's not being brought in as the guy guaranteed. He's going to be competing. Very talented kid, but he's going to be competing for the job. So everyone seems to be on board with. There was even some surprise. I mean, the most interesting one was David Peters. He said Harbaugh called him and said, "Man, I'm surprised you didn't call me. You know, Shea Patterson's in the news, and you know, nothing from you, nothing from your wife." And Mr. Peters' response was, "Well, Coach, Wilton left. We figured you're going to be going to get another quarterback." And I thought, well,
they get him.
It's like, man, Jim probably had to do a cartwheel to the point. Like, good grief. This is awesome. What an awesome response if you're the coach. So,
oh, man.
734-9982. He said, hey, man, we figured that's what you'd be doing.
It sounds like a guy on the way out. Man.
Going and get another quarterback. It's not. Come on, man. Don't feed the conspiracy theorists, man. Don't feed the conspiracy theorists.
Well, that's obviously like it's a shot, but I shouldn't be taking shots. I'm above that.
734-9981050. Let's talk to Terry and Celine. Terry, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Good. Hey, Sam, I talked a couple days ago to you. I guess my perspective is, you know, let the class play out, see if they can bring these guys in, coach them up, get them to overachieve, do the things that maybe some people didn't believe they could do. But my question to you, you hear a lot about the defensive side of the ball, coaches going out there, identifying working guys, persuading guys, getting guys to sign, i.e., you know, Madison Partridge and also Don Brown. You don't hear it as much on the offensive side, and I'm pointing a little bit more towards the offensive coordinator going out there, especially with this, you know, this class. I mean, they got a couple in-state offensive linemen, but, you know, you kind of have to look at, you know, if an in-state guy isn't really going out there stretching your neck too much because you really want to keep the better ones in-state. But going out there and you know, making a splash with, you know, some, you know, because the offensive line has been a glaring hole in this program for a number of years. And, you know, I'm pointing a little bit at Drefno as far as going out there, really identifying, really locking down a guy, getting guys to come in, you know, guys who are difference makers. And I think that's kind of the hole that I'm looking at in this particular class so far. Understand there's, you know, guys hanging out there, but there's been guys hanging out there the last couple of years that they haven't closed on. And a couple guys this cycle that they didn't close on, that they lost to, you know, Alabama. So, I don't know. I'm not saying he's not a good, you know, recruiter, but he just doesn't, you know, you just don't seem to hear much about him as far as being able to really connect and really to get those type of guys that you would think that they would be a little bit more pressing to bring into the program. So, I understand you're not going to bag on the guy, but, I mean, is there any type of validity that, you know, maybe he's not out there recruiting as much, maybe analyzes a little bit more and sends his other guys out
I don't think there's anything to that. We were just talking this morning about him being out with Jared Patterson, who I think, you know, they're in really good shape with. But, I mean, does Michigan need to close on some of these offensive tackles in particular? Absolutely. They need to close on some of these offensive. That is a major deal. But Andrew Stuber and Chuck Filiaga are two examples. They weren't as highly rated or regarded as the guy that was the glaring miss to me. The biggest miss last year, I'll continue to say, was not Najee Harris.
Isaiah Wilson?
It was absolutely Isaiah Wilson. Without question, it was Isaiah Wilson.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively. Nicholas Petit-Frere, Jarrett Patterson, those are big time courtships for Michigan this year. It'd be great if they can get both. I mean, obviously the big fish is Nick. He's 265, 270 pounds right now, but I think the thought is that between now and the start of his senior year, you could put on, he's about 270 now, you could put on a good 20 pounds, and he can compete as a freshman. But you got to get him, and you're competing with Notre Dame, Bama again. I mean, you're going to be competing with the who's who for Nicholas Petit-Frere. So we'll see. We'll see.
Drevno did – have guys like Jonathan Martin and David DeCastro at Stanford. So, I understand the last 3 years haven't been great.
Well, and his guys here are Stuber for sure. Because I remember when he offered, Stuber was at camp. And Stuber wound up committing not long after that. And he was a 4-star guy. I don't know what he was on 24. So he was a 4-star on Scout.
He was like a 3.5-star.
And then Chuck Filiaga was a guy that they did.
Hauningford.
Hauningford, for sure. So we have to see how those guys develop. But as far as the 5-star All-American guy, I mean, I guess Filiaga was an All-American. But other All-American guys, yeah, they need to close on some more of those to fortify the ranks. And we'll see how it goes with Pep. His guy was Joe Milton was his guy. That was his guy. I'm trying to think of other guys off the top of my head, but I know Joe Milton was his guy.
Well, in this class particularly, you're coming off a ton of offensive linemen. You're coming off a 4 wide receiver class. Like, the big hole was tight end, and they filled that pretty ably. And still recruiting it. So, it's tough to follow up that class that you had last year without people looking at, nobody's graduating. I don't get any playing time. I'm not getting $200,000. It's a problem. So,
I guess here's what I'll give you if you're looking for it. Sounds like you're looking for some encouraging sign, Terry. What I can tell you with Jarrett Patterson, and this is not me, so this is both Greg Biggins and Brandon Huffman, who both think that Michigan leads for Jarrett Patterson. I said, why? I said the kid, and both of them said the kid loves Tim Drevno. So if you're looking for some encouragement, there you go. I just gave you a bit. We'll see if it holds up. But he seems to have really established a great rapport with that young man. Going to be a battle with UCLA for a 4-star kid in the state of California. But Michigan, made some real headway with the in-home visit and with his official visit to Ann Arbor. It is 9:45 on a Thursday morning. Got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. A little basketball on the way out. Michigan basketball. Fortunately for them, they're in a part of the schedule where you can afford to rest Mo Wagner.
This isn't even part of the schedule.
What is it?
The team that they're about to play is 351st on KenPom in offense. Do you know how many teams there are in D1?
351.
So yes.
You're saying it's a glorified scrimmage.
It's not even glorified.
Well, but let's talk about the Michigan defense, which is actually, 27th on KenPom?
Well, I asked you guys
31st?
I asked you guys I think it was last week. Are they playing defense, or is it the opponents that they face?
Well, this should be opponent adjusted, right?
It is, but we have seen pretty frequently that Michigan gets to the Big Ten schedule, and particularly when it comes to defensive rebounding, and it looks like they're a pretty good defensive rebounding team, and then they finish like 10th in the league. So there's still that possibility. But Texas is just ugh. They were in like a 40-38 game with Tennessee State. And that was bad news when it was Tennessee. And it was Tennessee State, like, oh man. So they have it's ugly. Go ahead, Craig.
I'm sorry, Brian. I think it was 47-46 was the final.
That was the final.
Yeah, and the thing is, though, UCLA is a terrible offensive team, and maybe Andrew Jones, I minimized his loss, even though he couldn't shoot it in their two overtime losses. But that's a good defensive team. I mean, excuse me, Texas is a very good defensive team. And I still think, or I think this is a better defensive rebounding team than we've been in the past. I think objectively, just by the eye test, it is. And I think if you look at the numbers, we're way ahead of where we were last year on defensive rebounding. And so I think we're not Michigan State. That ain't, we'll have some trouble with a couple teams in the Big Ten. But I don't think that's where this team's going to fall apart, is on the defensive boards. I think where we're going to fall apart is shooting the ball. And that's odd for a D-Lang team, but that's what I see it.
I mean, I don't think it's that bad shooting the ball. But
it's pretty bad.
I mean, we still have Duncan Robinson. It's not like he's forgotten how to shoot.
It looks like he has. Well, I mean, he hasn't forgotten how to shoot. What has seemed to happen is that the extra burden of being a starter has really impacted his ability. I would start him on the bench and bring him off for the 20 minutes where he's been a really effective player the past couple
years. I agree with that.
Right. I mean,
So what about Xavier Simpson, Craig? I'm curious. I mean, he's been playing much better lately.
Yeah.
He's been, whereas Eli Brooks is starting the game, Xavier Simpson's been finishing it. He has hit some open shots. That's been impressive. His ability to attack the rim. He had a good assist game the other day. Just his all-around floor game has been better. The fact that he's hit open shots, that he's in a self-check when he's wide open, that makes me wonder, do you start to consider putting him back in the starting lineup again?
Well, to me it doesn't much matter whether he starts but he right now should be getting the majority of minutes at the point. I like Eli Brooks a lot. I think he's going to be a good player at Michigan. I think his long-term prognosis maybe more at the two than the point, but Simpson is playing well right now, and last year it looked like he would never ever hit a shot from the outside, but right now he is making open threes, and he's shooting open threes at a reasonable percentage. But the big thing for me is with Simpson is he is a phenomenal defender. He's a good on-ball defender. And a guy like that who can defend like that, you got to have him on the floor, especially when he's not hurting you on offense, and he's not hurting us right now. He's playing pretty well, and he seems to be on a gradual increase. And so I'm really happy with how Simpson's playing. I'm happy with how Brooks is playing, but right now I think you got to have Simpson has to be your primary guy.
Are you guys I've been looking at Charles Matthews, his ability to get to the rim. I think that's been a big asset for Michigan here over the last few games, especially. I can't figure out how teams can't get in front of him. I mean, maybe his first step is just that good, but you look at the scouting report on him, you know which way he's going, and yet they can't stop him.
No, he's good at making a second move. So he'll get cut off, and then he'll kind of put his back to the basket for a dribble, and then he'll resume his move. And that's been very effective. And then once he gets to the bucket, it's just like he plays above the rim, and that's the conversion rate when he gets to the rim is crazy. Like he's probably hitting 80-85% at the rim.
Yeah, there are certain guys, though, that if they're right or left-hand dominant, you put the scout on them.
Yeah.
Teams overplay them, and they're stopped. Him, so far this season.
It's nice being 6'6" with go-go gadget legs.
Right, so far this season, they can't get in front of the guy. That's been a major deal. I feel like the veterans on this team are going to I call it blind faith. I think Rock or Mars, you call him, is going to find some aggression. I feel like Charles Matthews is gonna find some.
Wait, he's a better
free throw.
Yeah, he's gonna find some level of consistency at the free throw line, positive consistency at the free throw line, And Mo Wagner, you know, I think is gonna be a first round draft. I think he's gonna be a late first round draft pick.
He's gotta be.
He's 68th on ESPN right now.
I know. Which is
insanity.
No, it's based on arm length. A lot of it's arm length.
Like his arms aren't gonna get any longer, so maybe we'll get him.
Back. I mean, this is such a crazy thing that arm length is such a big deal in the NBA draft.
I look at the ceiling.
It was a zero deal 10 years ago, right? Like legitimately.
Like look at the 1980s Boston Celtics. They'd get killed.
But look at the real quick the young players that we get some junkyard dog minutes from Isaiah Livers, but boy, Poole.
Yeah, Poole's not Poole, just a shooter. Man. He's got upside. He's got an explosive straight line drive to the basket. He can hit enough threes. You know, it's like, yeah, now we're talking.
He looks like he's a piece.
He also looks like one of Prince's flunkies from the Chappelle Show sketch. Like, Michigan has three guys who look like Prince's flunkies. Watson, Poole, and Eli Brooks look like those guys from the sketch.
No, see, Eli Brooks, I assume you're talking about his hair.
Yeah.
I think Eli Brooks' hair is on a whole different...
Also, I've seen them...
On a whole different plane.
No, like, seriously.
A whole
seriously,
different level than the other
there's,
two.
There's, like, different guys, and it's just like... Michigan needs to really recruit a guy who looks like Prince. I don't know where that guy's coming from.
Prince could play, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
He could play.
He could who?
Yeah.
You didn't know Prince could who?
Oh, no. My God.
I thought he was only 5'2".
Have you seen the sketch?
5'2". Apparently
not. Yes, Prince could ball, man.
You're
Prince
the last ball. Person on earth who hasn't seen it. Google it right now. I demand you Google it right now. He's not Googling.
We can wait until the show's over.
No, we can't.
All right. It is that actually, even long before the sketch, that was something people talked about, that Prince was a good basketball player. Yeah. So, but the sketch kind of made it, just blew it up, blew it way up. Anyway.
Can you imagine that's how you're going to end the segment based on how you started it?
No, but I can see. I mean, he's talking about Eli Brooks' hair, so I can see how we can wind up talking about
it. I got that part.
I can see how we get there.
Real quick, just indulge me for a second because we're wrapping up here. And since I'm off tomorrow, I'll be back next week on Wednesday. There's no shows next week on Monday or Tuesday. I just want to wish everybody out there a very Merry Christmas. Enjoy Festivus a couple days before that as well. Be safe out there, and I'll see everybody on the 27th. Sam will join us from Florida the week of the 27th, and the following week as well from Texas, and then Sam and I will reunite back here January 8th, I think is the date.
Yeah, that's right, but I will be back tomorrow.
Yeah, Sam will be here tomorrow. I just wanted to send my Merry Christmas wishes to everybody.
Yeah, we're going to talk to Sammy Faustin, Ryan Hayes, Hassan Haskins. We're going to have Inside Schimpfer Hall. I know I'm going to sit down with some of the recruiting guys, some of the recruiting staff from Michigan today for Inside Schimpfer Hall, so give you some insight there. So looking forward to that.
Better than